Welcome back, everybody. It's awesome to have you with us again as we go further into this deep dive. Remember how we looked at living in the now, and then how we untangled ourselves from the blame cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, today we're taking it even further. We're going to chapter 3.
Okay.
Owning Ego, the Fine Art of Forgiveness.
A really meaty chapter. And this kind of builds on what we talked about before, looking at fear and curiosity.
It starts by laying out some definitions, which actually are more helpful than you might first think. So ego is presented in a couple of ways. First, you've got that kind of inflated pride, that feeling of being superior.
The classic ego trip.
Yeah. And the other is simply being conscious of your own identity, just knowing you're you.
A bit more neutral, that second one.
Yeah.
So where does the chapter start? It seems to lay a foundation about experience first.
Yes. It jumps straight into how our past experiences make us who we are.
Yeah. That's reference one. It emphasizes that, you know, our thoughts, what we believe, how we act, it all comes from our unique history. It mentions conditioning even before birth.
Right. Epigenetics.
And then classical conditioning, ongoing stuff.
Right. It highlights that it's this continuous layering process. We're constantly being shaped by our environment, our relationships, everything that happens to us. And crucially, it's not just us. Everyone else is walking around with their own movie playing, based on their experiences.
That's the key. We often forget that, don't we? Someone reacts a certain way and we think it's all about us.
Right. But their reaction is filtered through their own life story.
And how we interpret them is filtered through ours. That's reference two, essentially. Something might push your buttons but mean nothing to someone else because their background is totally different.
That mismatch is where all the trouble starts, I guess.
It's where the misunderstandings creep in and, yeah, where the need for forgiveness pops up. It reminds me of that quote, "Everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Be kind. Always."
Oh, it's so true.
It kind of forces a bit of humility, doesn't it? Realizing our view isn't the only valid one.
It absolutely does. And that humility is, well, it's kind of the antidote the chapter proposes later on. It's the starting point for empathy. Okay, so we're all shaped by our past, interpreting each other through these personal lenses.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The book brings in this ego poop analogy.
You went there.
Yes. This makes it really tangible, I think. The idea is that our actions, our behavior, gives off a sort of vibe, a smell. So selfless actions, kindness, that creates a good smell. People are drawn to it. But ego-driven stuff, arrogance, resentment, holding grudges, that creates a bad smell.
And that's the ego poop.
That's the ego poop. Yeah. It's a bit blunt, but it sticks, right? It captures that negative impact our attitudes can have.
It really does. I'm thinking about how the chapter touched upon the idea that even before we react to somebody else's ego poop, our own ego can already be stirring up trouble. It's almost like our ego has a radar for other people's insecurities. It uses those insecurities as ammunition to make itself feel superior.
Such a powerful image.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. Like, our ego is constantly scanning the environment, looking for potential threats or opportunities to assert its dominance.
Yeah.
And it's those moments when we feel triggered or insecure or threatened that the ego poop really starts to fly. It really makes you realize how much of our interpersonal conflict stems from these fragile egos just bumping up against each other, each vying for validation and control.
Exactly.
So we've got these potential smells we're putting out there. How do people deal with the bad ones?
Naturally, we try to cover up that smell instead of cleaning up the source.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like you wouldn't just spray air freshener on garbage. The chapter talks about these ineffective ways we try to mask it.
Like what are the examples?
Well, humor is one. Using jokes to deflect from something serious or avoid owning up to something.
Deflection.
Apathy is another. Yeah. Pretending you don't care to hide, maybe feeling hurt or embarrassed.
In there.
And then there's the whole victim blame cycle. Either you're always the one being wronged or you're constantly pointing the finger at others.
Two sides of the same coin, really. Neither actually fixes anything.
Right. You're just rearranging the smell, not dealing with the poop.
So if those are the bad strategies, what are the good ones, according to the chapter? The actual cleaning solutions.
It boils down to two things, really. Apology, which stems from humility, owning your part in creating the bad smell.
Taking responsibility.
Yes. And forgiveness, which is deciding you are no longer going to be affected by the smell someone else created, or deciding to stop creating your own resentment smell.
So it's about addressing the actual source.
Precisely. You clean up the mess. You don't just try to ignore it or cover it up.
Which leads us nicely into the power of forgiveness itself. The chapter frames it as a very conscious decision. What's the heart of that choice?
The heart of it is deciding to stop, as the chapter puts it, pooping resentment yourself. It's a choice to let go.
Let go of the anger.
Yeah, and to allow other people their own unique life journey shaped by their experiences, even if those experiences led them to do something that hurt you.
Accepting that differences are just normal.
Exactly. Differences in experience and conditioning, they're totally natural. And instead of getting stuck in judging or feeling like a victim.
Which feels awful anyway.
Right. Forgiveness shifts you towards a more compassionate viewpoint, towards understanding why someone might act the way they do based on their experiences.
The chapter uses the phrase compassionate curiosity. I like that.
Me too. It's moving from judgment, how could they, to curiosity. I wonder what led them there.
And how does this link to this idea mentioned about a shared positive potential?
Well, the suggestion is that when we approach these differences with that compassionate curiosity, we actually get closer to seeing the underlying shared humanity, this divine potential the source mentions.
Like seeing past the behavior to something deeper.
Kind of. And the chapter also makes the point from reference 3 that we're all connected anyway. We can't not be connected.
So it's about the quality of that connection.
Exactly. Compassionate curiosity, according to reference 4, leads to smoother connections than staying stuck in condemnation or victimhood.
Which makes sense. Blame pushes people away. Curiosity can draw them in, or at least lead to understanding.
And it all ties into letting go of fear, doesn't it? Fear of difference, fear of being hurt again.
Yeah, the Yoda quote comes in here, reference 5.
Seriously, okay, gotta hear this.
Yeah, it references the idea that fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. Think about how unforgiveness just fuels that whole grumpy pipeline, right? It keeps that cycle going.
Totally, the dark side of the emotional force.
Forgiveness breaks that chain by addressing the fear.
Wow, okay. From ego smells to Yoda, this chapter covers ground.
The chapter then hits us with some pretty concrete, almost physical benefits.
Yeah, this is where it gets really compelling, I think. Reference 6 lays out a whole range of potential upsides.
Like what specifically?
Things like better cognitive function, healthier blood pressure, less anxiety and depression, even possible links to overcoming addiction, better heart health, and weight management. So decluttering your mental attic can actually lead to a healthier body.
Wow. It really drives home that holding on to negativity isn't just abstract. It takes a toll. Holding on to anger keeps our bodies in that chronic stress state, right? Which impacts all those areas over time.
A real physical toll. It's a powerful motivation to actually practice this stuff.
Forgiveness lets the body relax, return to baseline.
Then there's this other analogy, the egocentric sheep. What's that about?
Yes. That compares people who are primarily driven by ego, especially pride and fear, to sheep in a flock.
Okay, how so?
Because their movements, their reactions become predictable. They follow the herd, driven by those basic ego responses, and that predictability can be exploited.
Like how marketing might target our insecurities or desires.
Exactly like that. The chapter suggests this happens on a larger scale, too. If we're just reacting out of pride or fear, we're easily herded.
So the message is, be a shepherd, not a sheep. Or at least a more conscious sheep.
Huh. Something like that. It's about being aware of those ego-driven impulses and choosing a more thoughtful, less reactive path, not just following the fear-based or pride-based crowd. The chapter also talks about forgiveness as freeing ourselves.
Forgiveness helps us avoid being slaves to our ego.
Right. By choosing forgiveness, we're essentially telling our ego, you don't get to run the show here. We let go of the need to be right, to hold on to grievances, which diminishes the ego's control over our reactions. We gain freedom.
Okay. Thinking long term, the chapter proposes this idea of ego sanitation. Tell me about that.
It draws a parallel with the development of physical hygiene. You know, centuries ago, we didn't understand germ theory, and sanitation was poor, leading to widespread physical disease.
Right. Obvious now, but revolutionary then.
Exactly. So the chapter suggests that maybe in the future, we'll recognize the importance of ego sanitation practices like humility, forgiveness, compassion, as essential for preventing the spread of sort of socially transmitted mental diseases.
Like cycles of resentment, prejudice, conflict. Huh. That kind of thing.
Precisely. The idea is that cultivating these internal hygiene practices could lead to a healthier collective mental and emotional environment. It's a hopeful thought.
Managing our inner world collectively could actually improve society's mental health. That's a really provocative thought.
Indeed.
Every time we feel triggered, we have the opportunity to practice ego sanitation.
Right.
And choose a more compassionate response.
I'm really starting to see how forgiveness is this key to unlocking greater happiness and fulfillment in our lives.
It is.
It allows us to let go of the past, to cultivate healthier relationships, and to create a more peaceful inner world.
As we go deeper into this book, we'll see how this understanding of forgiveness connects to other important concepts. The next chapter, Self-Worth, The Quest for Respect, explores the patterns that shape our sense of self-worth.
Okay, that makes sense. I can already see how having a strong sense of self-worth should make it easier to forgive.
Absolutely.
If you're secure in who you are, you're less likely to be threatened by other people's actions.
Uh-huh.
Or to feel the need to hold on to resentment.
Exactly. And as we explore self-worth, we'll start to uncover the roots of some really challenging emotions, like jealousy and the struggle to give ourselves permission to pursue our dreams. It's all connected.
Wow. I'm so intrigued to see where this deep dive takes us next.
Me too.
Now, the chapter then shifts gears a bit and brings in various religious perspectives on forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. It surveys quite a few traditions.
And I was thinking about how these perspectives might loop back to the second definition of ego, just the consciousness of our own identity.
That's a great connection to make. Because you see, across these different faiths, forgiveness isn't just like a nice thing to do. It's often tied directly to understanding who you are, your true identity, and your relationship to something larger.
So like in Christianity, the idea that you forgive to be forgiven, and that maybe forgiveness should be almost limitless.
Right. Matthew 6:18, it suggests letting go is essential for your own spiritual well-being and connection to the divine. Leviticus also talks about not holding grudges, loving your neighbor. Isaiah mentions God blotting out transgressions, and Ephesians calls believers to forgive as God forgave them. It's central.
We have some really resonant Islamic quotes here. For example, Quran 42.37 speaks of the reward for those who do righteousness and believe.
Okay.
Well, when we think about forgiveness and humility, aren't those acts of righteousness? So there's a clear connection there between these positive actions and, well, positive outcomes.
So doing good, including forgiving, leads to good things. That's a pretty universal idea, isn't it?
It really is. And then there's Quran 49.6, which cautions against acting on incomplete information, basically, to avoid regret later.
Relevant.
Totally. How often does our ego just jump to conclusions, leading to snap judgments, blame? Forgiveness encourages us to pause, seek understanding, and avoid those ego-fueled missteps we might regret.
It's like the divine equivalent of think before you tweet.
Huh, exactly. Divine tweet moderation.
Okay, let's turn now to the Buddhist perspective. The Dhammapada comes up here, right? Very concise, very powerful.
Absolutely. Verse one is probably one of the most famous Buddhist sayings. Hatred will never cease by hatred, but by love alone is healed.
Simple but profound.
It really is. It speaks directly to how useless retaliation is. Trying to fight negativity with more negativity just keeps the cycle going, right? Forgiveness, which comes from love or compassion, is presented as the only way to actually stop the cycle, to heal it.
It goes against instinct sometimes, that idea. But it makes sense. Fighting fire with fire just makes a bigger fire.
Exactly. And the second verse highlighted is, forgiveness is the path to freedom. Freedom is the path to forgiveness.
Okay, that sounds circular, but in a good way.
Yes, it points to this deep interconnection. Holding on to anger, resentment chapter connects this to ego, right? That feeling of being wrong, it traps you. It's like an internal prison.
So forgiveness unlocks the door.
That's the idea. It leads to inner freedom, inner liberation. And conversely, the more free you become internally, the less burdened by ego and anger, the easier it becomes to forgive.
What?
They feed each other.
So in Buddhism, it's very much about your own inner state, your own liberation, maybe even more than about the other person.
I think that's a fair takeaway. It benefits the forgiver immensely. And Hinduism.
Hinduism offers a lot here. The Bhagavad Gita calls forgiveness high yoga, stresses controlling the mind for peace, seeing the mind as the cause of both bondage and liberation.
So managing the inner world again.
Exactly. And the Upanishads talk about forgiveness bridging the gap to the universal self, the true self, knowing that self is paramount. This directly links to that consciousness of identity, definition of ego, moving beyond the small, separate self.
It seems like a common thread. Understanding yourself more deeply makes forgiveness easier, or maybe forgiveness leads to deeper self-understanding.
Could be both ways, right?
And the chapter doesn't stop there. It brings in a few other spiritual perspectives, too.
Right. Let's touch on those. What else did it highlight?
Well, from the Tao Te Ching, chapter 14, forgiveness is the path to wisdom. Wisdom is the path to forgiveness.
Another interconnected pair, like freedom and Buddhism. Interesting.
Yeah, it suggests letting go of grievances clears the mind, allowing for wisdom. And as you become wiser, you understand more, maybe making forgiveness easier. Holding on to anger clouds things, right?
Definitely. Okay, who else?
Law of One.
Yeah, Law of One sees forgiveness as ongoing and suggests the only real enemy is within.
Eckhart Tolle.
Tolle focuses on inner peace through releasing the past via forgiveness, stating unhappiness comes from our thoughts about things, not the things themselves.
That's a big one. The Emerald Tablets.
They apparently place forgiveness in the heart and talk about as within, so without.
And the Book of the Secret of Secrets?
That links forgiveness to unlocking universal secrets and, again, stresses self-knowledge.
Wow. So across all these diverse viewpoints, there's this consistent theme. Forgiveness is crucial, not just for getting along, but for inner peace, self-understanding, maybe even wisdom.
Definitely. The value placed on forgiveness itself seems incredibly consistent. It really highlights how clinging to that ego, that need to be right or hold on to hurt, is seen as a barrier across so many traditions.
Precisely. Humility, the absence of that inflated ego, seems almost a prerequisite for genuine forgiveness in many of these views.
Seeing these religious threads also just underscores how timeless and universal this wisdom really is.
It really does.
And it connects back beautifully to those initial definitions.
Mm.
By practicing humility and forgiveness, you're actively working against that inflated sense of ego, the first definition.
Right, the superiority complex.
And potentially moving towards a clearer, deeper understanding of your true identity. That second definition of ego, your consciousness of self in relation to others and maybe the universe or the divine, depending on the tradition.
It really brings it full circle. Okay, so before we move on to the next chapter, I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier.
Sure.
This idea that our experiences, even those from before we were born, can impact us.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned epigenetics,
right?
But we didn't really dive into what that means.
You're right, we didn't. It's a fascinating field of study.
Yes.
That's really revealing how our environment and experiences can actually influence
yeah.
the expression of our genes.
Right.
It's not about changing our DNA sequence,
right.
but it's about changing how those genes are turned on or off.
So it's like our experiences can leave a sort of imprint on our gene.
Exactly.
Which can then impact our physical and mental health,
mm-hmm.
even our behavior.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a complex field.
Yeah.
But the basic idea is that our experiences can have a lasting impact on us at
right.
a very deep level.
That's mind-blowing. So wrapping up this deep dive into chapter 3, the big takeaways seem to be our ego, especially when it's inflated, can really mess things up.
Create that negative smell, yeah.
But humility and forgiveness are like the antidotes, the way to clean things up.
And they aren't just abstract concepts. There are real, tangible benefits for your mind, your body, your relationships.
And understanding where we're coming from, our experiences, and crucially, where other people are coming from based on their experiences. That seems absolutely fundamental.
It's the foundation for that compassionate curiosity which makes forgiveness possible.
Plus seeing how central it is across so many spiritual traditions.
Which brings us to a final thought to leave you with, picking up on that ego sanitation idea.
Yeah.
Just imagine, what would your relationships, what would our society look like if we genuinely prioritized ego hygiene, humility, forgiveness, compassion, as much as we prioritize physical hygiene?
Hmm. That's a big question.
It is. So maybe the smaller question for today is, what's just one small step you could take today towards a little more humility or forgiveness in your own life? Something to reflect on.
A powerful place to start. Thanks for diving in with us. Stay curious, stay connected, keep diving deep.